man, at least we're all set. Doc, you got any light, mate?
Because
the black dude in the black room's really not working for me. Oh, here we go. Oh, he's, oh, this is his cool thing.
Looks like he's in a hurricane power outage.
I'm not saying it's good, but when it's on, he looks like Casper the Ghost.
Hold on. I need a... my light stand got moved because I was busy this week, so I got to, like, situate a new one. Chochomate. Go ahead, let's go.
Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. We're going ahead whether Doc's ready or not, because he told me to. Simple as that. Joining me to do the Mac Show. Sorry, we've been away for a couple of weeks. I'm getting messages here from James Forrester. I think he's saying he's paid me, which is wonderful. Sorry, the last couple of weeks, but it was Easter. Everyone had family over and that kind of stuff, and it just so we had a bit of a meltdown and then work, and so I do apologise. But we're here now. Yes, we're back, and what a panel to come back to. This is unbelievable. We're going to come back to Doc in a second. Starting us off. Hasn't been here for an age. Andy and Atco, how you doing, brother?
Doing great. Last time I was here, you had like a beard.
Last time you were here, I had 6 stone more as well.
Well, all you needed to do was shave the beard, and people would say, "Wow, have you lost weight or something?"
Yeah, I've lost 70 pounds in beard. Thanks, mate.
Well, excellent. The great thing about also having someone on who hasn't been on in a while is that they get to congratulate you again.
Thank you.
And yes, you get true. To talk about get like your wonderful how much better your life is again.
Yeah, it's great. Let's move on.
Starting to regret it. He's like, you know, having a pie for dinner every single night. That was good. That was good for me. That was a good choice.
Now you've become Mr. Opera. I noticed on Twitter.
Kind of. Like I've always 10 years ago I started getting into opera, and now I'm sort of one of those nerds who has to say, "Oh my god, I saw Joyce DiDonato like in recital at Newton Hall last night, and it was a transcendent experience. I can't believe that she's gonna be singing Handel at the Met next season. I've absolutely gotta stick up a liquor store to I try to I try to stop being that big of a nerd. At least I've only room in my social life. People will tolerate me for being a nerd, but for two things, this would make 5 things I'm a nerd about. So I have to dial it back.
I've got to say, and this is like an Instagram thing, right? Where it's like, I'm sure it's not really as nice as it sounds, but you talk about like an overland train to New York to go to the Met. To watch an opera, to then come back on the overland train to Boston. It does sound a little bit Cary Grant, mate, I have to say.
It is quite lovely. I'll put the shot clock on this conversation to avoid boring people.
Yes, please.
But one of the really cool things about the Metropolitan Opera is that it is one of the great international opera houses, but they also have like $25 rush seats like at noon on the day of the performance. And because like I'm in New England, and so it's maybe a 3-hour train ride and the train service is not that expensive. If there's a show that I really, really want to see, but not enough that I would have bought $150 seats like 3 months in advance, I might actually say, "Ooh, that new production of the Wagner's Ring Cycle that looks pretty cool." It's a Thursday, so maybe not a lot of people there, and so I'll be in my office like at noon. And if I score those $25 seats, I will then like an hour and a half later be at the train station that's only about 20 minutes away from my house. And then there's an early morning 2:40 a.m. train home, so I can do it all like in one night and not disrupt. I won't be at my best the next morning, but I will have seen an opera.
Excellent, mate. Now he's lit up. We'll go back to Doc. How you doing, brother?
lit up as in studio lighting, as in drinking expensive Scottish whiskeys.
Well, based on the fact
that you said it was rubbish.
I had a picture at 9 a.m. of you with a snifter in your hand, mate. I'm suggesting that you may be lit still.
No. The point of drinking something that old is not to get drunk. The point of drinking something that old is to taste it and enjoy it. It wasn't about getting lit. If I'm going to get lit, I might as well just drink some cheap stuff.
Oh, man. 25-year-old mouthful of peat.
Yeah, you know, that Lefroy it's good, but it's not. I wouldn't go out backwards and buy that one. But the first one I sent you, I can't even remember the name, Glenn Flarenkig, Flarick, or whatever the heck it's called, something expensive. It's like $1,000 bottle, but that stuff tasted like heaven. Absolutely.
Glenn Farkless.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would call it, Glenn Farty. That's what I kept calling it. I was like, oh, we're going to have guests? Yeah, that stuff is amazing, bro. That is amazing. I just want to tell people in Paul's neighborhood that they're incredible at making that stuff.
Patrice says he's dialed in. So there we go. Patrice Brendable. Add.
He's coming on the call.
With Patrice here, now it's a party.
Well, he's not here yet. And
it's all off.
Now he's in. It's worked. Audio on. It's worked. Yeah. Oh, it's all right. That'll do. Beneath him.
Hey, guys.
It's Jeff. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I feel like it's been forever since we've hung out.
Well, it has been. I saw your image of the sheep on the plane all queuing to get out of a door that was shut.
Oh, my God. What is up with people?
I know. It drives me mad, that.
Yeah, when we landed, we just sat out away from the airport for a while because there were no gates to pull up to. Everything was full. And then when we finally get up to the – oh, no, that was the first leg of the flight. The second leg of the flight, when we landed, we pull up to the gate and the pilot comes on and he says, well, we're here, but there's no one to let us out of the plane. Because there's no one to drive the jetway up to the plane. Someone's supposed to be coming, but until then, we're just sitting here. And everyone stands up and starts popping the overhead bins open. And they stood there for at least 10 minutes before there was anyone to hook the jetway up to the plane.
They should do it like a members club, that if you're willing to sit there in the chair and just cross your legs and relax and read the newspaper, you get an extra drink.
You know, I already not just bad. Sit there and patiently wait, but if they gave me a drink to with an go extra along bourbon, with it, man. I would make sure they knew that I was sitting there patiently. Yeah,
absolutely. Please, sir, I'm sitting cross-legged on the mat. Can I have an extra bourbon?
Yeah, it seems a little fair.
It's logical.
You know, that's
it's
the thing
logical.
That you learn when you're frequently traveling. You just relax. I mean, you know exactly how everything is going, and you're like, I'm going to get out one way or another. I might as well just relax.
No, you didn't get out in time. You've got to go back to San Diego.
I would take that.
Yeah.
Only bad part about sitting and waiting is when you have just this butt right in your face while you're chilling there.
Yeah, that's why you get window seat in it.
It's a five-hour plane ride butt, too. It's not even the freshest butt.
No.
Don't you know the trick where you keep bumping into them so they turn around?
just lean over and plant a kiss on it. That'll soon sort it. No matter what the sex is, that'll sort it. Patrice, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing pretty well.
Turn up late and he beats James to the hello.
Anymore.
No. What have you? What do you get delivered today?
I got a washer. I actually ordered a washer and a dryer, and only the washer showed up because the dryer got recalled or something. So I have to call them again, fifth time of rescheduling everything. So I can say one thing: Best Buy sucks.
Well, at least your stuff will be clean, even if it's not dry. You can always hang it outside. It'll be dry in about 20 seconds in Arizona.
I have a dryer, so it's not too bad. I'm just replacing the ones that came with this rental here with like ones that are actually like from this century.
Arizona dries quick, but it's full of sand.
Yes, that is actually true. Yeah, we have a lot of dust here, especially in summer, dust storms.
And next to him, how you doing, James? Back in the UK.
Hello, everybody. Yes, it's been a long, long time. It's good to be back. I've spent the best part of a month in France. And now I'm back to lots of cool stuff. I've got rid of the late 2018 MacBook Pro, and I've gone for the brand new 27-inch i9 iMac, and it's pretty fluffy, I must say.
Oh.
And I can't stop myself.
Is that why you've nearly got lip sync now?
I'm not sure. Can you believe the iMac's still got a 720p camera?
You know that anyone that's got nearly lip sync on Skype has paid out for good money for a computer. And last but by no means least, the lady who keeps us all the best of behaviours that we can possibly manage, which isn't great sometimes. How Abashir, really? How are you doing, mate?
Hiya, I'm fine. Hello, everybody.
Now, how was WordPress Conf?
It was excellent. I overdid it because I had to lie out on my bed for like a week or two. But apart from that, it was wonderful. And I definitely recommend it if it's running in your area. And I am preparing because I'll be in Europe and that one's going to be in Berlin. So,
well, I when you said you overdid it, I was thinking we were back to the whiskey then, I have to say. I know what those conferences are like because I've been to Macworld, mate, and it's...
Yeah, there were a few nights like that.
But I'd like to say I've got some good memories of Macworld, but I've got very few. They're just kind of flashes.
Sounds great.
You and speaking of Macworld, real quick before we start, Adam sends his best to everyone in the lads. Oh. We had Brecky last Friday.
Oh, man.
And Miss Adam. Yeah, he said he really missed you guys, but he's been super busy with his new job, and he's all fancy and hoity-toity now, doing like database programming and whatnot. But yeah, he said he misses everybody except James.
So he's been there a while now. He's got to be able to. Yeah, he's been there a while now, so he's got to be able to get like an hour off from his boss to do the show or something.
I told him, I was like, if you don't come back, we're gonna replace you with that Andy guy. And he was like, that'll never happen. Well. So much he knows.
He goes to his boss and he says, so look, can I do this show? It's only an hour. And he goes, yeah, you can do it as long as it's only an hour. He goes, okay, well, I can't do it then.
So are you saying that I could help bring him back if I be one of those people who doesn't realize it's a podcast, but you're still not allowed to curse?
Oh, you can curse all you like on this, mate. Don't worry, yeah.
Buttocks. Bottoms.
I think I'm blushing.
I don't even bleep that shit. Right. The week in Apple. The month in Apple. Sorry. Facebook Messenger is coming to Apple OS. I can wait, mate. All right. Don't worry.
Not interested.
Yeah, moving on. I do actually want to spend a little bit of time on this. Just not much, but just to say, Apple ends the iPad 2. Upgrade. It's now obsolete. After 8 years, it's now obsolete. No, we give Apple a lot of grief on this show when we think they're doing wrong. But to support a device for 8 years, that's not bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think I've still got one, actually. I haven't turned it on, but...
It's probably...
Can we remember what was the change between the original one to this model? What was the difference between the two?
Camera?
Was it camera?
Well, there's definitely no camera on the first one, I don't think.
There you go. So we got the camera.
3D.
What else was there?
Application RAM.
Okay, remember.
Oh, application RAM, says Andy. Do you know the answer to this, James, or are you as lost as the rest of us?
I'm as lost as you all, but looking at you by saying it.
the big difference is the bezel, probably.
Nah, that didn't change. Because
that sucker was massive on the 2, but now bezel is so smooth and silky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, version 1 to version 2, there wasn't any difference.
Can I just say that one of the great things about having like 7 people on a podcast is that it allows some people who can hold their tongues to do a whole lot of Google searching and then at the end say, actually, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I think that's
what they went to the 18-nanometer CPU manufacturer process.
Spot the bloke who can type quickly.
Yeah, they went from an A4 to an A5 processor. It stayed at 1 gigahertz. But with iPad 2, they went to 2 cores. Built-in memory went from 256 meg to 512 meg. Man, they really cranked it up.
We had magnetic covers, didn't we? Remember that really cool magnetic covers video?
Oh, I remember that. I actually fell in love with that over time.
You know, there's an entire website called Differences Between iPad 1 and iPad 2.com, don't you? There is. You know, it's out there. Some geek has written that and bought it.
Well, I remember obviously being in retail, and I must have demonstrated that magnetic cover for 8 hours a day. I kid you not, people were blown away by it. Just the simplicity of rolling up cover and just snapping the magnets on the side. People
now, I'm going to say that was three, not two, but am I going to be wrong then?
No, it's definitely two.
That was two.
Yeah. I had two and smart cover.
I had one because I didn't have a two.
I think they switched to the non-metal design of the hinges because they were scratching the iPad too.
It was scratching.
I had that issue. Right. I forgot the metal hinge, which I preferred.
Yeah, they were nice. There was like three,
it was
wasn't
good,
there?
But
three
it scratched the iPad.
I don't even know where my cover is, but hey.
Fell in love with the cover. Bob Beach is a little upset us. that's too geeky.
Cover.
Too geeky by far.
But three cheers for the iPad. I've mostly switched to a Chromebook, a Google Pixel book, as my, I'm just leaving the house for 3 or 4 hours. I need something to write on or to read comic strips on while I'm out having coffee and doing a little bit of work. It's like sort of replaced my iPad Pro, first generation iPad Pro for that. But occasionally I will go back to it for certain jobs or just to make sure I don't forget what that's like. And it's, although I think the two devices are kind of equal to each other as a productivity machine, the difference in the fit and the function and the form and how polished just the software design is and the interface is on the iPad Pro, it really is like night and day. And I'm saying that as someone who loves the Pixel book. So there's always this thing where we do give Apple a lot of crap from time to time, but damn, A, they build really nice things so long as they don't involve having a keyboard in them. And secondly, that you get 8 years out of this thing. You can hand it down to a kid, and if that kid doesn't break it, they can hand it down to the next kid in the line. Mm-hmm. That's not something you get off of the Windows world or the Android world.
I'm going to say this, and I'm willing to take debate on it and criticism, but there's a bit of me thinking, was the iPad a bigger game changer than the phone? Because if you look at all the stuff, like the N95 and that kind of stuff, the phone market would have got to the iPhone level, not as soon as it did, but it wasn't a million miles away. Yeah, but whereas the iPad, it felt like it was a whole new lease of life on touch interface. It was the touch interface, whereas the phone was just an excuse not to use a keypad.
I would say to some extent that the phones basically improved. I mean, the iPad improved phone sales at a certain point. There were people when the first two iPhones came out or first three iPhones came out, there was still like, I don't really need a smartphone, right? But then if you got a tablet, either because you bought an iPad or, you know, someone at work made you start using an iPad, I think that onboarded a lot of people because they started to know what it felt like to be Minority Report and Tom Cruise, you know, and I think those of us that started in the beginning, like, we never lost it, but I think a lot of people came to the smartphone the way it is now after iPads, especially the kids. A lot of the kids started with that.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of kids was iPad.
I think we would have gotten to the iPad eventually as well. I mean, that's the nature of innovation. Like, if one company doesn't do it, it just might take a little bit longer, but eventually someone else will do it. And I think with someone else getting to the phone and getting to probably multi-touch at some point, that was just a natural progression to like also move that to the tablet market. And remember, there were tablets before the iPad, and not just the ones that were announced like a month or two before that never came out. I mean, Microsoft has had like touchscreen, I mean, awful, but has had touchscreen like tablets for years and years and years. So I think
like
it would have happened eventually.
Well, the Jornada had touchscreen.
So we're coming at this from the wrong angle for the game changer part. And I say that because Apple was creating the iPad first. So they were coming up with all of this groundbreaking technology and interface design and then realized that they needed to make the phone happen. So the iPad was the catalyst to give us the phone. And and then they continued to work on the iPad, which eventually came out. So iPad is definitely the game changer, but we perceive the iPhone as the big change because that was the first product released.
Also, it was way more massive. Like, the iPhone is a mass market, like, for almost every one device. The iPad has never reached that level. I mean, there were a couple of years where, like, it was everywhere. Like, every TV show, everybody, I mean, it entered the cockpit within, like, a couple of years. Like, it was everywhere. But since it's, like, more of a, I want to say, computing device and more of a, like, also investment, like, it's simply more expensive. It never reached the same level that the iPhone did. Mm. I mean, the iPhone has sold, I don't know how many billions of devices now.
I think the problem with the iPad is that Apple got into this really dogmatic idea that if you have a touch interface, you shouldn't have a stylus, you shouldn't have a trackpad input, and it should deal with a keyboard kind of as an afterthought, not to encourage people to use this as a keyboard-attached device. Mm-hmm. And if anything, devices like Windows 10 2-in-1 convertibles and Chromebooks with touchscreen have really shown that, you know what, Tim Cook, when he said that it's like putting a toaster on a refrigerator, like putting bacon on a peanut butter sandwich. It just makes both elements work better. And the reason why I switched to a Chromebook for, again, that I'm going out for a few hours, I'm going to be doing either edits on an article I've written or I'm going to be doing email. The reason why the Chromebook replaced my iPad is because it's just so nice to be able to lift the lid of a laptop and have a keyboard that doesn't have to pair or anything. As good as the iPad is, as much as I loved having a bag that had a keyboard stand and my Logitech K811 keyboard, I just wanted it to be more immediate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did the original iPad come out with the keyboard, or do I misremember that?
Like, they had stand. I still have it. They had a stand that had a really nice mechanical keyboard, but it docked because the docking connector for the iPad is on the skinny side. You had to like type on it like a Xerox, you know, Alto, as like a vertical sheet of paper. So it was, and also because it was like a hard molded thing, you really couldn't carry it with you anywhere. It was fun. It photographed well, but it was kind of silly.
Well, that went a lot longer than I thought. Sorry, Jeff, go on, you got a final point?
No, we're good.
All right, excellent. No, sorry, that was meant to be just like a bit of a start, but there is no more news, actually, so well done.
good filler.
Apple's also saying that Aperture will not run in future versions of Mojave.
Who's still using it?
Are they still using it? I didn't even know it ran after Snow Leopard.
Well, can we still run iWeb? Because I'm still doing iWeb.
You're desperate. Yes. I was going to say, otherwise your website's never getting any Google.
I was at a Sony conference last weekend, and there's like, you know, some top photographers from all around the world conjoined here in Hawaii to take pictures standing at the beach.
And you.
And I was absolutely surprised how many guys talked about the nostalgia and missing Aperture. Now, nobody's still using it because, of course, they know better. But I was shocked at how many people loved it. I thought it was a great program. I think the only thing that was bad is when your library ate it, it took some serious work to uneat it. But I was surprised at how many people really like missed that program and how, you know, good it was. And I guess at the time, it was incredible. But they just got passed up real quick by a bunch of things.
The thing that was really cool was non-destructive editing.
Yeah.
That was the cool
thing. They were first, yeah.
Without thinking it was non-destructive editing. Because I've always been anal about keeping originals and that kind of stuff and keeping them separate because at times I've overwritten files. But when it did that by default, that was like, yeah, that's cool.
And I mean, just remember, there's no real replacement for Aperture from Apple, at least not from Apple.
Well, no, they said that that's what Photos was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I
thought it automatically upgraded you to Photos.
It did.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand why people are still, maybe they just declined, I don't know.
Well, you lost your iPhoto library if you didn't upgrade, but it didn't kill your Aperture library.
Yeah. It's just too bad they killed it. I love when Apple writes its own software not only is it generally really good software, it also, it's just emphatically everything that Apple believes is great about the Mac interface and the Mac hardware, or the iOS interface and the iOS hardware. It is an explosion of, it doesn't have to be cross-platform like an Adobe product. So it is, there's no compromises about it. And so it really bummed me out that they took a product as good as Aperture, which I used all the time, and kind of forced me to switch to Photoshop and Lightroom. And now that Adobe just recently, I think just this week, decided to double the price of their Photoshop and Lightroom subscription bundle. It used to be $10 a month. Now it's 20. I think they're going to $20 a month. And now a lot of people are saying, gee, if only we had like a good $70 or $80 tool that could do what Lightroom does. And there are third-party products that are going to fill the void, but this would have been such a great opportunity for, if Apple had at least sort of maintained it and sort of remained committed to it, this would have been a great opportunity to kind of elevate it as another pro tool.
The thing that gets me is, it's like you've just said there, I was upset when they killed it, but actually this story tells you that they didn't actually kill it. It's like Robert Parrish in Jumanji, and Robin Williams has just come out of the jungle.
They put a litter of puppies into a box and left it in the woods. They didn't kill the puppies.
No, it's Jumanji. Aperture is Robert Parrish out of Jumanji.
I need a Jumanji to comic book or Star Wars translation of the reference.
You're joking.
I saw it once when I was a younger man.
Aperture is that you thought it was dead, but it was alive all along.
Fiction, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it was still in the game. There we go. All right, I'll move on then.
You're talking about
Got it.
This time he didn't come back.
That's quite possibly the flattest joke I've ever told. If only that were true, eh? Power Beats Pro now available in pre-order in the US and Canada. They've been pushing this pretty heavily. I've been to the cinema the last couple of weeks to do Captain Marvel and then Endgame. No Endgame spoilers. We're still on embargo till the weekend.
Yep, I don't see it till tomorrow.
Yeah, so, but Power Beats, the adverts before Endgame, they've been pushing these damn hard. They're a good looking. Yeah, no, they're on. I've seen.
Not over here.
Really?
No, there were no Apple ads at all, I think, before Endgame, at least here in Phoenix.
Oh no, everyone we've had here, and it's the advert where they're all wearing the Power Beats, but the Power Beats never move from the screen. It's the athlete that moves. Really coolly done, but.
I'd agree. I saw Endgame last week, and. You're right, Ewan, on the IMAX theatre here in Telford, they displayed it, and it was amazing to see the advert on such a massive screen. And I think it was very cleverly done, as you said, with the Power Beats being centre of the screen for the whole advert, give or take a few shots with the guy on a skateboard and I think the girl in the wheelchair, I think. But it was excellently done, and I think straight away, though it was a Power Beats, you knew it was an Apple advert. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. $249. Bit pricey?
Not
for Beats.
No, not for Beats.
Not really in general, because, for the most part, for a long time, standard sort of high-end headphones, not earbuds, but headphones, $249 was the mark, right? Starting from the Quiet Comfort 2, they were $299, but the Quiet Comfort 2, the Bang & Olufsen, Beats Proper, Ultimate Ears, Edemotics, like you go down the list and you look at iPhone high-end headphones and they were pretty much always $250 to $300, so not so much. You are paying an extra $50 for the B, but if they're anywhere as good as these, they're amazing already. And from what I understand from the specs, they seem to be as good as these ones I have in my head. So I just kind of want a pair just because it will be nice to have one that you're absolutely sure is not coming out. These don't come out, but those are guaranteed not coming out because it wraps around a nugget.
Well, I've got, I've got my inserts that I had molded to my ears because my ears are big enough gap.
Right.
So I can drop in my AirPods and I know they're not going anywhere. I can go out cycling and it's not a problem. But I had to pay another £80 to have the ear inserts made, so I've kind of eaten the argument there, haven't I? Mm. Who was that?
I like that.
That was someone's electronic fart.
We should record that and coin it.
An electronic fart. I hope that recorded on the audio.
Coin it.
Because I'm gonna, and I hope I didn't talk over it, so I can screen grab it and then put it on a sound effects stock site. Apple fights proposed right to repair legislation with warnings of consumer harm. They are desperate for this not to go through the California legislation, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a bit sad because one of the joys I remember earlier on was being able to open your computer or your phone, being able just to tinker around with it. So it's a bit of a shame that they're actually trying to stop people.
Some of us, that statement is like, we used to love opening our transistor radio.
Gotcha.
I would say though that obviously when I used to go to the Genius Bar, when they took the screen off an iMac, there would be some sort of really kind of precious people going, stay away from the iMac. If you touch this part, it will kill you. Even though it's unplugged from the mains, it can kill you. And that used to really worry me because you just obviously, when you see the glass off an iMac in the Genius Bar back-end system, it's amazing. It's great to see. And, you know, it's very intriguing to look at it. But to be told that if you touch a certain element, you could die, it certainly makes me very anxious. I don't know.
Have you ever seen one implode? This is why I don't like this thing, but I don't like this thing because I come from being an ex-genius. Now, we don't have CRTs anymore, but if you've ever seen an EMAC explode because someone didn't listen to what James is saying, it is extremely loud, it is extremely dangerous, and somebody could actually get killed. But luckily, no one was there. Something fell off the shelf and then crossed the yoke. And my God, it is an incredible sound. It sounds like the war.
Hang on. Now, I'm willing to admit that there's probably a couple of you here who aren't old enough to be able to do this. But surely all of us have thrown a stone at an old TV screen on a bit of wasteland that's been flighted. I know I have. I came home.
No comment.
Well, so I threw a stone. There was a patch of land around here that we used to go, and there was like, you used to get porn magazines. You remember fly tipping porn?
This is so often.
But there used to be some guy who lived with his mom who was 53, who had tons of porn. His mom found it, and he'd obviously dumped it suddenly. So that, you get the thing. But there was always a TV there as well. And I threw a stone at one of those things, and this went padoosh, and it went in and out, I guess. And it threw silver stuff everywhere. And I went home looking like I'd come off a freaking Christmas tree. And I'm not joking you. I don't think it was radiation, not in the slightest, but I showed up in the dark for 3 days.
Glowed.
It took me 3 days to shower that stuff out of me.
I was only about 12. Inside of that glass. If it gets inside a cut, that's a life experience.
So we've all done that, right?
Yeah.
I have no
comment.
Somebody's porn TV screen, but I have misjudged.
No, they were mutually exclusive, dude.
Hold of a 19-inch Trinitron and dropped it, and that was the cleanup. The 2 hours of cleanup was almost worth the experience of hearing that pop.
Bob says no, he hasn't, but then John Logie Baird hadn't been born, so.
But speaking of right to repair, I went to the MIT flea market a couple of weeks ago and bought myself a 2008 MacBook for $10 that turns out to work. It said that it needed repair, but it worked just fine. And I've been sort of working on it, and it is just such a revelation from earlier from what it's like to try to repair a modern MacBook. This doesn't even have like security screws holding it together. You can just get a regular screwdriver. You pop it open and you can replace the hard drive. You can replace or upgrade the memory. The keyboard is not suck. It's actually a very, very good keyboard. It has actual ports on it. Which is also incredibly nice, and just to think that yes, this was a $10 flea market purchase for me, but at the time this was the super cheap $1,000, if you can't afford any other MacBook, here's the MacBook for you machine. Mm-hmm. I kind of miss these days where Apple had, I know that at the time it was because they're still trying to sell lots and lots of MacBooks to schools. And so they weren't going to get away with having a public school system having to send all of their hardware back to Apple or to hire an Apple technician to be working on site. So people had to be able to repair them themselves. But, you know, we are the sort of like that frog that is dropped into the pot of like room temperature water and they just keep increasing the temperature. We forget how open and free and wonderful the old MacBooks were because they just keep downgrading our experience time for time. I really hope there is a right to repair law. State by state, district by district, because we absolutely need one.
Bob's saying he still got his. I've still got a black one as well. But he's pointing out as well, and it had a replaceable battery. You could actually take the battery, buy a new one, put it back in again, and they were reasonably priced.
I swapped out a lot of those batteries.
And the RAM as well.
The only thing wrong with this is that the battery is dead because it's 10 years old, and I can just replace it with a $20 knockoff battery, and the only tool I need is a coin to pop this off.
Yeah, true.
What company? Is this an Apple logo? I don't recognize any of this.
Yeah.
What's really cool, it had the little battery indicator on it as well, didn't it? Has it still got that one on there, Andy?
Yeah, on the side. That was right. Yes.
It was on the side.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's on the back, but the number of times where like I've had to open up my MacBook because I don't know what the battery life is, and I don't know if I need to get like another hour's worth of charge on it before I leave the house.
Yeah. Fantastic. No.
Good stuff.
God, that was great.
So we've got Andy there going, right to repair is essential. Doc saying no.
No.
He's still been a corporate man. Power?
I still want it.
Yeah.
Right to repair. Yeah.
Absolutely. Patrice has been a corporate man, even though he's never worked for Apple. James?
I never technically worked for Apple, but I worked at my university's Apple support. Like, I've taken apart most devices that you guys keep talking about. Like, I've taken them all apart. And honestly, I don't think we should. Like, most people should be able to take it apart. Like, it's not about consumers being able to repair it. What I disagree with is that Apple should be the only company that can do any repairs.
James?
Like, I think there should be a market.
James, did you just look at Patrice then?
I did. The sideways thing like, hello.
That's good continuity, dude. Well done, though.
I agree with Patrice in a way that I think certain, if there's a risk to life, like I said with the iMac especially, when you take that glass off, then obviously there should be, the right people should be fixing it. But when it comes to iPhones and things like that, I think there's less sort of chance of getting killed by the device, then maybe that should be a thing.
Here's why it's not the
hang on, hang on, party. Hang on, Doc, hang on, Doc. We're going to Jeff next. Your turn, mate.
All right, I have problems with right to repair, but it bothers me that we can't do things like replace our RAM or upgrade our RAM, put in a new SSD. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Chat room's going with you on that,
Yeah, I mean, we should be able to do things like that. And I'm wondering if part of Apple's fight against right to repair has to do with the likelihood that they would then be in a position where they're expected to continue to produce components for devices that they haven't supported for years. And then they have this added expense that goes along with having to produce and maintain all of these old components. Now, I'm just totally guessing there. I don't know.
I don't think so because that could be handled by a third-party market. I think it's more about
absolutely
the design constraints that would entail. I think Apple wants to have basically ultimate freedom to design whatever they want, to do whatever they want, and there would be some constraints put in place, and they just don't want that. Like, they want to do whatever they want to do.
One of the legitimate things that Apple can complain about is that as privacy and security becomes more and more important, not just to the Apple brand, but also just in general, you can't have somebody, it's hard to design an iPhone so that the secure enclave chip can be separated from the, can be replaced or separated from the rest of the thing. You need to sort of have a way to figure out that somebody has replaced the logic board of this device with a new one. And maybe it's because it was broken and someone had a pile of parts at the strip mall and they were able to replace it. Or maybe it's because somebody has reprogrammed a security chip to allow people to get into this secure enclave. Mm-hmm. So, but there are ways around it. It's, if I would be perfectly okay to thing, if I had a if I had a 3 or 4 year old iPhone that I'd spent $800 for back in the day, and I'm just not in a position to replace it with a brand new iPhone, or I just don't want to do that. If you gave me the option of saying, again, not going to the Apple store and saying, well, this is an obsolete product, we don't do service on obsolete products, and that gives me the option of saying, okay, well, I'll go to this shop in a strip mall that does iPhone repairs, and they tell me that we can repair this, but it will no longer have Touch ID. You'll have to type in a PIN. I would be okay with being able to make that decision for myself. That's, I think, the idea of right to repair. Not so much that Apple has an obligation to support products forever, but at least it gives people options of saying, I don't have $1,000 to spend on a new iPhone, and it kills me that the only reason why this isn't working is that there is a charging circuit that has burned out, and there is a person who owns the tools that can simply remove that chip and replace it with another chip. If the greatest illumination on right to repair is just going to looking for repair videos on YouTube, like on the Nintendo Switch, I'm the sort of nerd who finds it endlessly entertaining to get a video of someone who bought on eBay like a half dozen DOA Nintendo Switches, and he takes all six of them apart and manages to assemble four working ones from the parts. Not only that, but because the Nintendo Switch has been out for a while now, they know that if something doesn't charge, there's a good chance that it's this component on the board that has failed. And although it's not easy, it's not something that I would care to do myself, somebody who has accumulated the experience and has the tools can simply remove that chip and replace it with a new one. And now, instead of spending hundreds of dollars for a new Switch that only needed a new component that costs $8 and maybe 1 hour of bench time to fix, I would spend $68 or $70 to get it fixed, whereas I might not have $200 or $300 for a brand new Switch. So that's what we're talking about with right to repair. It's not that having to make everything so it has socketed ICs so that we can all fix them just like I used to fix my Apple IIe back in the day. It's basically making sure that there's, if an ecosystem wants to grow to create third-party outside of Apple repairs, that there's nothing artificial that's stopping it from happening.
So here's the counter argument to all of this. First of all, if you have a car, anybody has a car that's less than 10 years old, it's not like the 76 Chevelle that we used to be able to work on. You can't do anything to your car now and put water, oil, and gas. Everything else has to go in. But the difference is cars are much, much safer. Right? Lithium ion batteries, if you've ever seen one explode, or if you watch idiots on YouTube do dumb things with them and explode them, or if you watch people overcharge them, lithium ion batteries are a very dangerous piece of kit. But going to what I guess the genius in me says, I have totally had people come in, swear to God that it's something that we screw up, call me names about my grandmother and my mom and everything else. And then when we open the computer finally to just go ahead and fix it under warranty, we find out that the logic board is inserted half crooked. Kapton tape is missing. All these things are not correct. Why? Because they tried to fix it themselves, didn't know what the hell they were doing, broke it, came back and literally cursed me out top and fro that we built an inferior product, but they had already been in there and attempted to fix it and didn't know what they were doing. And we spotted that. But in the end, what we would normally do just to not deal with it, we would just replace their computer, right? So part of the reason why a lot of people shut down people's ability to fix things, and I would say a lot of it has to do with our country's culture more than other countries' culture. People here love trying to get away with as much as humanly possible. And it's a part of our culture that I absolutely hate. So because of the cheaters, because of people going to repair shops where they would put in substandard parts like Andy spoke of earlier, where there's no real Apple logos and stuff on, all of those nightmares became a nightmare for Apple, right? local shop here, the guy was literally replacing everybody's parts with these parts from a company called Newer Battery back in the day, or NTI Battery Tech. And then he was selling the Apple legitimate parts on eBay. So people would take their thing in for repair, and the guy's like swapping them out with substandard crap. So all of the above pushed them to don't repair it. But also, if we make it so that no one can touch it, we can do what James says and design it so it's the highest and best use of a device. So we can't have both, right? If we really want that ingenuity, we want that waterproofness, you can't have a removable battery. I want the phone to waterproof. I want to be able to change my battery. Pick one. Dude, you can't do both. Everybody here that's married have had this conversation with their wife about, no, honey, you can't have both. You get one or the other. You can't have it both ways. Right?
Well, this is... watches are an example where that works.
Like, just think about it. Like, if you want watery proof, you know, the computers are basically water resistant now. You wouldn't get to that if you still could pop the top off all the time. That membrane and all of that stuff that ties it down, the butterfly keyboards to keep the Cheetos out, which has been a nightmare, but they're slowly working these things out. A lot of that elevation came from shutting things down to make it so that normal folks can have it. I prefer better product. And the last thing I'll say, the concept of my $1,000 phone is dead because I can't replace a battery, BS. Battery replacement is $69 on every device. Screen replacement is $129 on every device. So they will absolutely give you an entirely
brand new phone.
For like $150.
Screen replacement on the iPhone XS Max is £329.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, well, I don't live in the UK. I think it's $199 here. But either way, that's still not
better not be. It really better not be. I am going to go and
I'll double check it.
I don't break my screen. So
there will be a homicide if that's
the truth. I never drop my devices. I take care of them. But the point is, it's not $1,000. You can get it replaced for a decent price. It's not insane. It's not much, that much
it's
more
a
than
a third of the price of the item.
For screens is $200.
You can get the screen only replaced for a third of the price of the item.
But it's not good value for money, is it?
The thing is, $329.
How much is it here?
$329 out of warranty for the XS Max.
Thank you.
For the XS, it's $279.
So warranty is a year, and AppleCare makes it 2 years. So that's only for the people that didn't buy AppleCare, which I get. You know, like, I can understand that's expensive, but the point is, like, insure it. Homeowners insurance covers it, like, you know, business insurance covers it. And a lot of people do things where they're not taking care of their device and then they're mad at the company because it broke.
Yeah, but the problem there is, you see, this is where you're into the anti-competitive stuff. I hadn't envisaged this would go on this long, but okay. The anti-competitive stuff there. The
damn you for asking interesting questions that foster debate amongst open-minded intelligent people.
I'm out of here.
But that's where it's anti-competitive, because the Apple are making devices which are difficult to repair because you've got heat issues, haven't you, to get the screen off on the iPhone XS Max. So that makes it difficult to repair to start with. So it means it's not open. It also then means that they don't provide the digitizer and the software for calibration of the digitizers. Therefore, no one else can do it. And then they go, well, it's £329. It's one third of the price of the device. Shove it, mate. I'm sorry. That's not okay.
But that's the most expensive part. Can you change? Can you fix your TV anymore? Can you go in and open up your
LG? There's no analogy there,
mate. Can you open the monitor on your desk and fix it anymore? No. Can you fix your car anymore? No. You can't even fix yourself anymore.
Actually, you can and you should. But the problem is, and at least in America, you have companies that are asserting stupid things like copyright control, saying we will not give you the diagnostic software because it's under copyright. Or John Deere, the BS of saying we have copyrighted the cables that connect to the electronic control unit to the rest of the motor, and it's illegal for you to make something that doesn't have the features of this cable.
Yep.
I do appreciate that there are a lot of things that even a talented third party are not going to be able to fix, or even shouldn't be allowed to fix, again, things that compromise the security of the device. But there's so much that can be fixed. Like, to, yeah. Again, getting back to the MIT flea market, someone bought, I thought one of the dumbest things I saw walking around earlier in the show was someone had a 60-inch plasma display, plasma flat-screen TV for $30 with a little note saying that no warranty, but I think it just needs new capacitors. I thought, oh, God, who's gonna buy this huge mattress-sized screen dead? And I'll be darned, somebody actually did buy it, because that is something that happens. Sometimes it's just capacitors that need to be repaired. And if that person wanted to spend $30 and the immense amount of trouble getting that thing home to take that chance. So it isn't an all or nothing proposition. There are things that can be fixed, and it's the third party community that's going to figure out what can easily be fixed and what can't. Is it, again, replacing a burnt out charging chip that maybe died because it got a little bit wet because you were sweaty or whatever? That's easy. Reballing an entire GPU, probably not. But again, I really think it's important, as these devices get more and more expensive, and in this sort of economy where someone might have bought that iPhone because they were saving for years or because they had fewer medical expenses and a better job 3 years ago, and they really absolutely need this thing to be working again, but they don't have $800, they don't even have $650, but they do have $200 or $300 to give to a third party. I would like to know that if it's possible for that person to find a solution and have a working phone again, that they can get a working phone again. And I just want a law that simply says that you're going to give a reasonable amount of help to the third-party repair community in the form of information, and at least not arbitrarily blocking access to information, tools, and hardware.
Yeah. A couple of points here in the chat room then. So Bob Beach says he agrees with the right to upgrade, but not necessarily the right to repair then. So I think we're all agreed on that one, most definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. James says max £3,500 AppleCare 189. GB Redneck says 10, insane that AppleCare costs more for an iPhone than it does for an iMac that's three times the price. But Patrice has put this in, and I was going to say this. It's not a portable device, so the chances of walking and dropping it onto concrete down the high street are limited.
Yes.
Unless you're taking
it. I'll give it a go.
It just costs more.
Unless you're taking
unless you buy that case.
Repair, of course.
Yeah. So.
Now, the other thing, parental controls are another thing that have come up briefly this week, and they're saying that there's anti-competitive stuff for Apple, because they've taken away a lot of the third-party parental control stuff that were available for the iPhone. And there's complaints over that being anti-competitive. But if that's a free service that's on the OS, I don't see there's a real problem, is there?
I think the services that are offering their like parental controls right now, they're saying Apple is like using its power to shut that down. But Apple is very clearly saying it's about privacy. It's about giving someone access to something that the user who's like installing those profiles on their phone simply doesn't really know about. Because the only way how that works is you have to install like a provisioning profile on your phone that basically gives the parental control company full unlimited access to your device. Like they can shut it down, they can wipe it, they can install apps, they can basically do everything. Are they gonna do it? Hopefully not, but they can. And Apple is saying like without like proper consent and people understanding that this is that this is possible and that they're basically giving away like control over their device, you shouldn't be able to do that. Both sides, honestly.
Some of the companies that have apps that got pulled are coming back and saying, yeah, Apple is being misleading with what they're saying, because that's not really how the software works.
No. Yeah, didn't they ask for the API to be opened up?
Yeah.
So that they could have access.
Yeah.
I can see both sides, but I'm thinking, wouldn't you just have as a standard feature on the OS system?
Say that again, Howa.
Sorry, I said I can see the argument on both sides, but surely it would just be a standard rollout that just needs to be on the OS and not necessarily attached to each app.
I think that's the proper way, and that's also the way Apple should be doing this, like allow other... I mean, they've done it with like those spam filters and so on, where third parties can provide their own filters. Like there's a way how to do it, and I think they should be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, make it safe, but make it also, like, possible.
Yeah. I think the big, I don't think that Apple is being intentionally anti-competitive, but it does show, it does illustrate a couple of problems that Apple is just always going to be dealing with. Number one, that when they're a company that creates apps for iOS devices and also necessarily competing with third parties who are probably going to create those apps before Apple does and might have a different or better take on how to implement them, there's always going to be questions, at least, of anti-competitive moves, because Apple will give itself permissions and give itself rights that they will never give to a third party, which, of course, is as absolutely in the best nature of the users and the best nature of the integrity and security of the device. But the other thing is that there's just a persistent problem Apple has with communicating to developers and also just changing the rules, it seems, to developers from year after year after year. When I talk to developers, from independent people to folks who make some of the most popular and longstanding apps for Macs and iOS, they just tell me no end of horror stories about how I just did what I thought was a trivial update to my app, and the App Store declined it and said that the method that I'm using for delivering delivering a file is violates such and such of the API. And if I asked them, well, this was always okay and you didn't change the API at all, why are you declining it now? It sounds to them as though the replies they're getting are just boilerplate, and suddenly they have this huge problem that they didn't have before that is taking their time away from being able to add new features and make the software better for its users. And they're spending all this time on coding just to make Apple happy and having another pull of the lever, which will just give them a green light or a red light with no other information until they rebuild and then pull the lever again. So that's what makes me think about this stuff.
As someone who has been on that side of the coin, and I've had, like, my apps were rejected for things that were fine before, I see it a little bit differently. I mean, in a lot of cases, the rules were in place, the rules were clear, but they were not always enforced, or they didn't catch it. Like, sometimes the app, like, app review simply didn't catch the issue for a while. Or, like, something triggered them to, like, pay more attention to it now. And I can understand that as a developer. Do I like it? No, absolutely not. Like, I want to push out and, like, even sometimes just a bug fix update to fix something. And now I have to invest, like, a week or two or however long it takes me to fix whatever Apple now thinks is wrong. And there's no guarantee that they're not going to find something else next time. Like, I submit the next update and they're like, oh, by the way, now we found this thing and we fixed it. Otherwise, you can't do it. Like, there's no guarantee. And that is frustrating. I get it. But I think it's something you know when you get into it, like, it's widely known by now. And, I mean, there are certain people who push it, like, who actually try to get through with stuff that they shouldn't be. And you should be surprised if that, like, blows up in your face.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that part and parcel of just development in general, then? Because
yeah, it is.
It doesn't matter whether it's Apple or any other software system or programming language, you have the same thing.
Yeah, the difference is there's no gatekeeper. Like, if I put I can like throw an app on my server or like a service on my server today, and there's no gatekeeper. Doesn't mean that what I'm doing is right. Doesn't mean that like I don't have any issues in my app that I should fix. But I don't have a gatekeeper. I can just do it.
But also, I think they're just not clear
with the communications nine times out of ten. Most of the people's complaints has to do with Apple. A lot of times will be the because I said so mentality, not, you know, wanting to explain it, or they give you no rhyme or reason. But I think the biggest problem is a lot of times these things weren't in the right in the first place, but no one ever caught it, like you said, or something else brings it to light and they go, oh, this is an issue we should pay attention to. And then so they start paying attention to the issue and everybody gets mad. But I would tend to believe that in most cases, a lot of the developers, when they're doing this, they already know that this is, I was not going to like it, but we're going to let's see how long it rolls. And then there's other, you know, other cases where, yeah, it just came up. We just realized that this was a bad way to do it. So let's change it because there's a security concern or, you know, little kids are buying too much Smurf berries or whatever the case may be. But I think in most cases, the developers, they kind of know ahead of time what they're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Do companies like Jamf now need to start getting worried? Because these parental control products are using MDM, multiple device management. And that's what products like Jamf Now do. And, well, on one hand, I can see people saying, okay, well, yeah, product like Jamf Now, that's designed for users that really know what they're doing. But there's nothing to stop just the average user from saying, you know, I could control all my kids' devices from this one interface, and it doesn't cost very much to do, and you can sign up for Jamf Now as an individual. So is Apple going to start putting restrictions on companies like that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, that's the difficulty. Like, what if a third party comes up with an idea that's going to be, that's maybe more in tune with what parents want and need? And as to developers finding a way around the rules, that is a problem, and that they do that with a certain amount of risk. But that's also kind of, that's been a defining characteristic of programmers since the first time that an electron was sent against its will down a length of copper wire. You're supposed to, you know what's right for the product, you know what's right for the users, and you figure out, did that compile? Yep, that worked great. Did it get approved by the App Store? Yep, got approved by the App Store. Then that's, we've done our job. So it's always going to be a delicate balance, and I do think that Apple is absolutely doing what it's supposed to be doing by protecting, not trying to solve a problem after it's occurred, but being proactive and seeing that this could be a big problem for security if a bad actor were to decide to implement this thing in the wrong way. But at the same time, you got to let third parties find their way and find the awesome in your APIs and find the awesome in your features and your hardware, or else you're just going to be stuck with this in-house mentality that's really not good for the consumers at all.
Mm-hmm.
Good debate. Got a couple of good debates here. 7 people, under 2 hours. We were asking for it, but we did all right.
We didn't even get to the story about Tim Cook being fired.
Oh man, another computer stopped working.
He was asking for it anyway.
He was stealing glue sticks. You know, there's a reason why there's a log for the supply closet. They had to let him go for a couple of weeks without pay.
I promise not to do it again.
Hopefully he's returned a chastened and improved CEO.
Oh. He's sitting doing Bart Simpson lines on a chalkboard in the basement. This podcast and all this is brought to you by TSO Host. We are thoroughly, thoroughly indebted to them. They've been a great supporter and host of the podcast for a very long time now. We would be lost without them. I keep saying it every week, but it's the truth. And the thing is, that they'd love you to buy stuff. That's fine. But they don't want it. James, you're not on screen. No, being a dick. All they want from you is brand recognition. So you can use the offer code BTN20 and get 20% off your hosting services. But what they really want from you to do is just tweet out, thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. Because they have. Simple as that. So please, please, please take yourself to Twitter and say thank you for supporting British Tech, because without them we wouldn't be able to do what we do. We have no bandwidth, we'd have no storage, we wouldn't be able to show you all the videos we've ever done going all the way back to the first Mac show, and that kind of stuff. So please support them. Thanks also to Wirecast. They give us the software that helps us do all of this stuff behind and put up annoying scrolling text to where the chat room is, but I can't work out how to change the font size.
I'll get there.
I'll get there before Big Show.
Say the phrase. You need to learn it more.
And thanks to Hoyer as well for providing me glasses. I cannot, every day someone walks up to me and goes, I really like your glasses. And they're Hoyer Unikus, simple as that. So go and contact podcast@hoyer.co.uk and they will organise the special red carpet BTN treatment for you, as long as you say you are from BTN, and you will get the experience of having your face fitted with bespoke. Right, time for the cool thing. Start us off, Doc.
Alrighty, I got this thing, and I pretty much love it. I bought a MacBook Pro after everyone said don't buy one, and one of the things that I thought was important was I was going to get a dock no pun intended, to connect the monitor and my external hard drives connected to the network and everything else. I initially started out with the Belkin. That turned out to be somewhat of a headache.
Yeah.
Then I tried out the IO gear, and it crapped out in like 3 months. So finally, I gave in and got the OWC Thunderbolt 3 dock 14 port. And here's why this is cool. The one thing that it does, and I want to show you to you, but it's actually connected right now, so I can't do that. I was going to grab the box, but it's back over there. The things that they've done to it that made it differently, and let me pull out the link so I can just send it to you. On the actual dock itself, on the front where your standard USB-A port is, but it's a 3.1 Gen 2 port, it in the front one specifies a high speed port so that if you come in all of a sudden and you need to plug in an external drive or something, you get a faster port. On the back, there's four. The last one on the edge of that is a high power port. So if you want to plug in your keyboard and not get that irritating message that the device that you plugged into your keyboard doesn't have enough power, it will do that because it will pass the port. It will pass the power through the port. Does that make sense? Right. Yeah. So I can charge my iPad Pro out of the front of this guy, and I can also, you know, connect a device that needs to move a lot of data or whatever out of the other port. But then they also added the what's the word I'm looking for here? They added a micro SD and a standard SD ports right on the front. That's where the other two ports are. Most of what you see on the market tends to be 12 ports. They did 14 by putting the micro SD and the regular SD slot right there in the front and not really charge you anymore because it's still one of the cheaper of the docks. And I hate, you know, bashing a product, but if anyone tells you at the Apple store that you should buy this Belkin dock, punch them right in the face because it was a right piece of crap. But this one is built like a tank. The body is metal. The top is a really hard plastic. And you can even order them now, which I found out after I ordered the 10 gigabyte adapter and this one. You can actually get them with a 10 GBE connector in the back if you are an editor like myself and you need a fast thing connecting to your Synology or otherwise homemade RAID. So for the price of the four docks that I tried, this is the one. Just buy the OWC Thunderbolt 3 dock. Review will be popping up soon. Oh, yeah, by the way, 85 watts of power to charge things out of the front.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Andy, what's your cool thing?
Well, I did already talk about the cool $10 MacBook that I bought, so I'll mention
That's hands down the coolest thing so far this year.
I like it. And good $10 spent. This was a good $3 spent. This was in a box at the same MIT flea market of just junk, and if you essentially offer them any amount of money for it. This is the Apple Personal Modem, which I bought because it's just cool. It's just cool design.
It is.
Remember when Apple used to design things that kind of looked cool as a static device? This is back from the frog design days. So it has, these were necessarily like speaker holes, I know, but they decided let's put vertical lines down there to give it some breakup. How about a color Apple logo on it? And it's just, I just like it a lot. And you know, a friend of mine posted upgraded his Mac Mini just about a month ago, and he, of course, it was exclusive because he had to pull out the old one. There was finally an excuse for him to clean his desk, and so he proudly showed off, here is my Apple Cinema display, here is my my Mac Mini, here's my new Apple keyboard, here's my Apple mouse, and everything was just featureless gray. And that's not what you associate with a really cool, hip company that prides itself on design. It's like super boring. So I'm kind of hoping that Apple, they don't have to do anything retro, but I hope they appreciate that having actual like details on a device that attracts the eye and it makes it look pretty and interesting. And if the device is being used by humans, which is, I believe, is Apple's target market, they will appreciate and enjoy that quite a lot.
I loved that modem.
It was. That is cool. That is, yeah, there is no getting away.
And so cool functional, too, because it just plugs in. Even just being plugged into the wall, and of course, you got your jacks on the bottom there. Even just plugged into the wall, it looks cool as a piece of artwork hanging on your wall, pretty much. And then, of course, for international use, all they had to do was just replace these to give people the right outlet that they needed for their part of the world. So again, it was $3 well spent. I haven't cleaned it up yet, but I'm just going to enjoy having this on a shelf as an object du regard. If I didn't take French in high school, I took Latin, so that's, I'm two steps removed from knowing anything about French, but you know what I mean.
That's a killer line. It's just like, I didn't take French, I took Latin. All right, okay.
Tota Gallia divisa est and tres partem. Italia. Okay.
Can you order a pizza in Latin?
No, I used to know a thing. I can't remember it. It's fist and miss the bus, and it sounds Latin, but it's not. It's I missed the bus.
Semper ubi sub ubi.
Yeah.
Always wear underwear.
Ig pay Latin pay.
yeah, yak that is.
Moving on.
Romanes ite eum.
E pluribus unum.
That's this week's competition. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, dude?
You know, I thought this was cool, but that modem is a really hard act to follow.
It is. That's true.
and I'm sure some people are going to laugh and say, really, when they look at my pick, which is the new Angry Birds game that's AR.
Ooh.
And, ooh.
It's, what? Yeah, so it's called like Isle of Pigs.
Yeah, I've seen the advert for this.
So you're shooting the birds from the slingshot point of view. And when you hold your phone up and you're playing the game, it puts the towers and stuff that the pigs make out in front of you in the space that you're actually looking at. So you can go outdoors and play Angry Birds on the sidewalk or in the park or, you know, in the living room, whatever. And I know Angry Birds has been around a long time, but this new AR version, it's just kind of a cool take on the game. And you can download it and play it for free. And if you're like me and you're just a very casual gamer, you don't need to pay for any of the in-app stuff because you're not going to be playing it at a level where you get frustrated about the intentional hobbling that you see in these games. So
it's not Angry so you Birds, don't you don't AR. Feel like it's been intentionally hobbled. That is very groundbreaking.
Yeah.
A game that's not suckering you into spending money. Surely not.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the thing is that no one's paid attention to anything from this point forward in the rest of the podcast.
No, because now everyone's playing Angry Birds.
Everyone was like, ooh, Andy's modem, and now they're just ignoring everyone from this point forward. So we might as well just wrap up. I know I am. Patrice, what's your cool thing?
So my cool thing is the original Home app. Like, if you remember back in the day when Apple released HomeKit, there was no app. And someone like went out there and created a really good, really, really, really good HomeKit app. And it has stuck around, and it has gotten way, way, way better. It's still massively better than Apple's Home app that now comes with iOS. And it's, more, as far as I remember, it's free, or it's very inexpensive, like a couple of bucks maybe. But
I wouldn't say it's $15,
so much,
but it's worth it.
It is absolutely worth it. Like, it allows you to do so much more than Apple's Home app, like especially on your automation side. You can do a couple of things that HomeKit allows, like on a technical level, but Apple's Home app doesn't allow you to do. And so far, I haven't found any other app that actually does that. Like, most apps are fairly simple. So definitely worth it. It is my favorite. It's not the most beautiful app in the world. Like, Apple's app looks a little bit nicer, but it's from a functional perspective way better. So I bought it, and like I can just highly recommend it. If you have any HomeKit gear, get that app.
Excellent, mate.
I'm with you.
£14.
I love that app.
£14.99 here in the UK.
It's worth it.
Okay. So it's absolutely. It's more expensive than I remember, but it's absolutely worth it.
Excellent.
Are you going to get kicked out of the store for stealing the exact icon?
Since they existed before Apple did it, apparently not.
Yeah, well, they had the icon first. Apple yep. copied mm. theirs and made it that kind of 3D sort of thing.
Yep.
What's that word? Oh, my God. I forgot the word now.
Not anthropomorphic.
That's a lens. What's it called?
Skeuomorphic.
Skeuomorphic. There you go.
Skeuomorphic.
Yeah. Yeah. James. Mm. Well done, Trish. Good one. James, I take yours wasn't the dock then that you put in earlier.
I spent ages
queuing up.
I wasn't sure if it was Doc's dock. Mine is, I don't like doing this, but I've built a website for a friend over the past few days. He's desperate, so obviously he's come to me. I've downloaded this. Sometimes the stupid of apps and the most cheapest of apps are sometimes the ones you use a lot of. And I obviously using screen capture for the Mac, you know, is it Shift-Alt-4 and Shift-Alt-3? And it's just mm-hmm. a lot of button presses. I thought must be something out there that can quickly take a shot of something, even at a selection of the screen that you're looking at. And this just fits the bill. It's absolutely brilliant. It's 79p. I'm sure there's other ones on the market. This came up on the App Store, and I gave them my money, and it's been absolutely brilliant. I've been snapping away, no problem at all. What I really like about it is normally if you take a screenshot with your Mac, you have to go into the preview and then change the quality down if you're using it for your website, etc. This allows you to obviously capture and set the quality of that screenshot for every one you then take thereafter. What's really good is I contacted the guy who made this, and I said it'd be really cool if you could add like a real simple way of using the selection. Either had another icon in the dock that you just clicked on for the selection as opposed to clicking on the icon in the dock and then doing it almost two clicks as opposed to one. And he's been really good. He's got back to me, and he's going to be working on that in the next iteration, which is just brilliant. So as developer, he's...
Yeah, but is he giving you any royalties for the change and the upgrade? Because that's going to be an in-app purchase now. He's going to make a fortune. You get sod all.
Well, 79p for the app, I don't mind. I don't mind paying another 79p. It's just, like I said, it's one of those things that I do all the time. I take a screen capture, then I go to preview, then
it's wonderful.
Go to the
actual My life is screen capturing, mate. So.
Yeah, mate, I tell you, it's absolutely brilliant. Well worth 79p, and when he does that new update, it'll be even better. So there it is. It's called Final Shot and available on the Mac App Store. It's 79p or 99 cents if you're in a new America.
Just bought it.
Oh, mate.
Just realized I need to update my payment, but yeah, I'll be buying it.
Honestly.
Oh, wow. I got this exact same thing. I don't know why it wants to verify my billing info.
Your card might have expired.
It's because you thought you were being clever by using Howard's credit card. Didn't you? She thought she was being clever by using yours.
That's weird because I did that incalculable trip where I made sure that all the ones and all the I's and O's were ones and zeros. I didn't think I would get back that. Bastards.
Howard, what is your cool thing?
So I've dropped mine into the chat room. It's another foodie one because, as some of you know, I like food. But this app lets you actually share anything that you have in your house. So they're aiming to tackle food waste, but I think it's available in about 32 countries. And just take a snapshot of any food you've got at home and just post it. And anyone in your neighboring area can just tell you they want it. So it comes in handy because I've got quite a lot of allotments near me. So it's been good. And also with spring cleaning stuff.
That sounded like I've got a few allotments near me that I steal vegetables from.
Nah.
That's such a great idea, but I wish it were called Are You Gonna Finish That? Because that would make it perfect.
Yeah, so they do other things as well, but I mean primarily it was set up just for food, but you can flog anything on there, I think. But yeah, it's just you're giving it away for free, so rather than it going to waste.
Now I'm gonna show me age here, but are you all aware of the Olio cookbook? Because you're all going Olio, that sounds interesting. Oh, yeah. I bet that's different. But the Olio cookbook was an original cookbook, which is long, long, long out of print, I would guess. But Google. There it is, available on eBay. For £18.39, and it probably cost less than a shilling when it first came out. And my mum and dad have an Olio cookbook, and it always used to be the go-to place to refer to. What should we have for dinner? Let's have a look at the Olio cookbook.
It's on Amazon.
SPS from it. Wow, so I'm wondering.
It's on Amazon for $9.99.
Yeah, it says $8.99 for here, hardback.
Is that a new one, or is that
no? It looks like the old one because it says 1954.
Yes, that's it. That's the one that my mum and dad have.
You can get it in hardcover for $25.
But I'm just wondering whether Olio is either a steal on that name or whether that's the original company. I don't think it probably is, but
you know, interesting. It's probably the original company, and if it's the same company I'm thinking of, they started as a butter alternative.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so
That's right.
And the way it was originally shipped, because the butter union or the dairy lobbyists were afraid, excuse me, that this fake butter alternative, Olio, would take over the dairy market, so. They got a regulation put in place where Olio was shipped as two components that you had to mix once you got it. So it was the oil part and then the other parts. And so you'd open up the container, mix them together, stir it up, and then you had your butter alternative.
Excellent. Cool. Every day's a school day.
I'm kind of worried, though, that cookbook that you listed is 1948. And if it's British, does it include recipes on saying, and if you don't have flour, here's how to super grind sawdust for a flour-like consistency?
Probably, yeah. And it's probably all high-fat stuff as well, so I'm going to dig it out.
Shoe Perfect. Polish makes a wonderful butter substitute.
We have a show title.
I wonder if they've got Oxtail recipe in there.
I was thought we were going to show title. I was going for Isle of Pigs.
Isle of Pigs. Oh, mate, there's so many. We were a hit, a rich
I didn't,
program today.
I didn't take French. I took Latin.
Yeah. Andy's hit a cocaine in South America.
I just wanted to be able to read the money for the first time in my life.
Excellent show, everyone. The Bash is coming up 27th of July. If you would like to come to the Bash, then you need to get on and buy a ticket, because I promise you, on the 27th of June, I will cancel the Bash if we do not have 60 adult paying members there, please. And I'm going to be harsh. Those people that have booked a hotel already, fear not. We will still be having a small gathering at my house of people who are those who've bothered to come to it. I hope that's not 55 people, though. At this point, but please, if you book your ticket, get it booked now. It's britishtechnetwork.com/bash tickets, and if you do not book and I do not have enough people by the 27th of June, I will cancel it. Simple as that. We've always had enough at the last minute, but I'm sick and tired of the stress of it all. It's going to happen or else. There you go. And also, for those people that that donate, if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/subscriptions, Kyle gets paid to do the news show by the donations that we get. And it's really important you keep those going as well. If you're on Patreon, please transfer your donation from Patreon to the subscriptions link, because it's we've had problems with Patreon paying us because we're an overseas podcast, I guess. It's a WS9. Crap like that. We'll get paid now, but just a nasty taste. So, there we go. Where can we get a hold of you, Doc?
You can find me all over the internets at DOCROCK. And also, don't forget to check out the YouTube channel, also by DOCROCK, and solid.fm. That's where I be.
Andy, where can people get you? We'll see if we'll get you a few extra followers, eh?
If you can spell my last name, which is not a given, you can find me as Anatko on Twitter and Anatko on Instagram, and my blog is at anatko.com. And I do a half hour of tech talk on Boston's National Public Radio Station, WGBH, usually about every week. But if you go to WGBHnews.org, you can either listen to it live as it's happening or watch the stream at a later date.
Excellent, mate. Matt Break Weekly. Did you say Matt Break Weekly?
Oh, sorry. And Matt Break Weekly is on the Twit Network. You can also, I also do a Google podcast on the Relay FM network. Well, you know, Apple's, you know, Google stuff is available to Apple users as well. And that's on relay.fm.
I don't mind plugging Leo Laporte. He's no competition to us.
But, you know, you'll get there eventually. You know, chin up.
No, I was talking he'll get here eventually. where are you, Jeff?
I'm over at smilesoftware.com and textexpander.com. And on the social networks, I'm at Jay Gamut. And
you've forgotten who you are, haven't you?
God, it's
jeez, senility.
It's been a long 2 weeks. Does anyone remember who I am and where I am?
Get
Google
off my lawn.
Easy to find.
Not in San Jose yet.
Get it straightened out before you meet up with one of your three wives or two husbands, because that's going to be.
I'm kidding. You need a flow chart for that stuff.
Patrice, where are you?
Well, every week here on the Mac Show, everything I do on the patrice.com, and in about a month in San Jose at the WWDC. So if you want to meet up, just reach out to me.
Oh, excellent. And where are you, Angry Pig Rickard?
I love the app. It's great. You can get me at James Rickards on Twitter or udemy.com/AppleMotion5.
Now, we've had your caricature done. Did you like it?
Mate, my caricature is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I've got to mod the bottom bit. I've got to have a little motion sign in his hand, I think. But yeah, mate, it's fantastic.
I did give him the motion logo and say put it on, and he just put two Apple ones. So
no, it's good, mate. It's lovely. Excellent. Thank you so much. I really love it. And I'm going to, I'm using something called Adobe Character Animator. And I'll have some fun things to show you that soon. So watch your space.
Excellent, mate. And Howard, we did your caricature as well.
Yeah, you did.
Did you like it?
I liked it. Homage to Doctor Who, of course. What was not to like?
Yeah, sonic screwdriver in hand.
In hand.
Where can everyone get hold of you, mate?
You can find me on Twitter at Howie A, and also in the Slack room.
Mine is Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can follow the network at British Tech. We'll be back again next week as normal, and the big show's coming up at 8 o'clock, and we've got a packed panel for that as well. It's going to be a great day of podcasting. Have a great weekend and a lovely bank holiday on Monday. Thanks for listening.
Oh yeah,
you've forgotten you've got nothing to do on Monday.
I forgot. Yeah.
Oh, blimey, all that time, no idea.